Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast, with me, your host, Bobby Temps, and your other host,
Danny Hogan.
Yep, that's
Danielle Hogan. Sometimes Danny, sometimes Danielle.
Believe it or not, there was a whole decision-making process behind the scenes on which one.
I know. Not bothered, really. Some people are bothered about the name. Spell it wrong, if you say it wrong, doesn't matter to me. Are you bothered?
Not really. I do have a friend, though, that once went on a date and the person clearly remembered her name wrong. And, you know, there's always that person that says your name like it's punctuation every other sentence. He was one of those. And so, like, let's say Violet. Violet is not her name. Everything was like, oh, so Violet, this must be something you'll know about in your industry. And that's my text tone. It's not a call to fight in the Hunger Games. Oh, that sounds slightly more sinister than it is.
Yeah.
But today we're not here for anecdotes of my friends so much as anecdotes about, first off, our guests and some of the great recent episodes we've done. So I think the first one since our last monthly review like this was with Dave Chawner.
Love Dave Chawner.
Well, I'm lucky with a lot of these guests so far that I know them. I want to say in real life, but even that doesn't, real life doesn't feel real anymore.
No,
what is real
mean?
In 2020?
Yeah, exactly. What does that mean? Yeah, in flesh life.
In flesh life.
According to Laura Lex.
Laura Lex, yeah, she said about meeting a flesh person in flesh times. I love. So no, Dave, it was really interesting because we've just never really talked relationships in that depth, and he was so open about it. And I was aware, you know, he was our first male guest episode to be released.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought how novel it was that any stereotypes you might have about men in dating, he did not seem to fit any of them. If anything, he's had difficulties around like communication issues from women he's dated, which we maybe stereotype more as a male issue.
Yeah, because for him, it feels like the shoe's on the other foot, right? Stereotypically.
Yeah.
He's much more aware of his emotions and that kind of stuff than maybe some of the women that he's dated. I wonder how they view that.
I mean, yeah, maybe they don't necessarily agree, but I think that's partly what he's been through. He's had to become aware in order to overcome certain stuff with his mental health.
Yeah.
And as we know from our other podcast, a lot of that, people do like to gender. People do still think of dealing with an eating disorder as being something feminine.
Yeah.
And so maybe, you know, you could look at it like that. But actually, I think a lot of the things he raised, like insecurities around sex and the pressures that can exist on men as well, that we're expected to want it constantly, are also unrealistic. The kind of expectations on all of us are.
I know. When I listened to it, I was like, I always think that I'm open and aware enough to know that, like, we're all individuals and, like, I really try and live as much as I can without, like, stereotyping. But I know that I do it and, like, we all do it. Come across a man who potentially, like, isn't really that into it that much, I think would be quite novel and unusual. I don't quite know how I'd feel about that. I'm not saying that, like, men are all, like, constantly rampant, but it is a thing that you kind of associate. I don't know, maybe it's an age thing as well. Like, young men are like, with me and my friends, we like presume, like my one friend who's just like sex mad, she's just like, you just got to find the young guys because he's just up for it all the time. Forget the 35 plus, you need to get down in the 20s. That's the girl talk between us 40-year-old women. It's probably a load of shit, isn't it? I mean, it's not, because I reckon that is in general more the case, but there's obviously men out there who aren't like that.
Yeah, but this is one of the areas where I just don't think the gender binary can really apply, because equally, what's the reverse of that stereotype that women don't really want sex most of the time?
I know that ain't true.
Well, also, is that more so to do with, again, societal expectations of women? You know, it's a bit uncouth to talk about sex and your needs, but as we've established in episodes already, that's important. Whoever you are in the relationship, it's only fair to your partner. They know what you want, right?
Yeah. And it changes, right?
Because
at the beginning, you might be quite up for it. Or the other way around. You might not really be somebody that's experienced good sex, and therefore it's not something that's like on your agenda as much. But then you could have a great relationship, a connection with somebody, and the sex is just off the chart. So then you're doing it more than you ever thought you would or knew you would. It goes both ways.
And it's the same thing as you were saying with each person as an individual, each relationship is.
Yeah.
And so I find one question that I really dislike is if someone says, oh, what are you into? And I'm like, I mean, you, hopefully. I'm like, how do I answer that? But it's really common. And you just think, well, for me, it's different for every relationship. You know, it's also to do with what you're into. I'm not just going to come into it and be like, these things, and you have to fall in line. No.
Yeah.
I'm into exploring sex with you at this time. That's what I'm
ask you that? Somebody ask you that?
Yeah, yeah, no, I've been asked that, definitely. It's a politeness, you know, it's not a bad thing. I wouldn't shame that question, but I just personally struggle to know how to answer that.
Yeah, because it's the fluidity to it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's their experiences as well, you know, because some people are into certain things, aren't they? Like, really into certain things, niche stuff.
Things that are maybe less common, so it can absolutely be a way to try and open up that conversation. Mm. Like the amount of people we know that will say, how are you, because they want to talk about themselves.
Yeah,
that it could be an element of that for some people.
I mean, I think I'd die if somebody said to me, like, I just don't like that, like, what do you want, how do you want it, is the chemistry not quite there?
It feels sort of distinctly porn-like, to be honest. So we've already talked a fair bit about being performative in relationships. We've talked about that, particularly with Olga. You know, the idea of, particularly if you're in a creative and performing field, not then doing that on a date. You want to be the person behind the scenes, not just performing comedy at somebody. And I kind of feel like it's a bit like that. The big disconnect that I can find sexually is I can fall into the trap of performing it for somebody. And, you know, it's got to be about both of us having fun. And
yeah.
I don't know where that comes from. I don't know if it's time spent in modelling that I'm, do you know what I mean? I can step outside of myself and think, okay, how am I coming across? Right. I don't really know where that comes from. But it's a way that I'll disconnect, potentially, and that's not good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons, I've been with Anthony for so long. We've always had, like, a wicked chemistry, like, I can't imagine that not, you know, I'd probably hold my future, if I was single again, I'd hold my future relationships or experiences to that, because there's so many people that I speak to, men and women, that will say that performance element, you know, or doing something for them. And I just can't imagine that. It's always felt natural, and I've always felt that that's what it should be like. Like, let's not be performing. I mean, you might have to do a little dance. That's different. But not sexual acts, maybe, for that person if you're not enjoying it. But guess if you are. And sometimes that can get you, you know, you do things sometimes for other people, and then in turn that turns you on. Do you know what I mean? Which should. So when you're doing stuff for somebody else and you're not getting anything out of it. I think it happens though, right?
Yeah, I think for a lot of people it does, and there's that danger of, particularly in a heterosexual sense, the idea of sex being something that's done to women really creeps me out, and I think that is unfortunately something that can be quite prevalent, and I do worry how pornography can influence that if people are used to being able to put into a search bar whatever they want to see, and then it is performed for them. Maybe that's where that kind of expectation can come. And maybe on the other side of the receiving end of that, you can feel that pressure from somebody.
Yeah, the porn's got a part to play in this, good and bad. I was just thinking that I'm sure when Dave Chawner listens back to this, he'll think, how have they got from me to porn?
True. I mean, we covered a lot, but you're right. We didn't go into, well, in his interview, we did cover a lot, but no, we didn't go into this. And then I guess by contrast, our next episode with Laura Lex, we were talking about her being in a long relationship and being married to her partner. And so that felt quite a cozy conversation for me, and hearing about how great their relationship is. And it's nice to know that that's out there, and they're surviving a pandemic, and they're looking out for each other, and right.
I think that's amazing. Like, it is amazing. And she spoke in such a, you feel warm, I guess, listening to relationships and marriages that are working out, because I think a lot of them are kind of riding through. And I know I'm in a long-term relationship and it's cool, but I mean, it's got ups and downs. Not all the time. This pandemic, like the first one, we're locked down in the summer and it felt like a novel experience. I mean, he works away, he's in London most of the week. That's how we like rock it. And I've realised there's a reason for that, because now it's a bit boring. And it's not that the relationship's boring. I'm saying like the situation's boring, but it's boring for everybody. So I keep stopping myself from like looking at him on the settee. I mean, I know it's not him that's boring, but being bored and thinking, like, is it easier to be bored on your own, being single, like you, Bob, with no one else to be annoyed at, really, when you kind of live on your own? And I mean, you've got a housemate, so even that, you may look sometimes at Kat and be like, oh, you do my head in. It's fine, like, we're good, but, like, it's just
a I'm neither going to confirm nor deny get in trouble.
It's the routine, but if you're a routine person, maybe you like that. I'm not, and Anthony, we've never had that. So to hear Laura talking was, like, cool, we're there for each other, but at the same time, like, sometimes I don't want to be there for him. I don't think he wants to be there for me. Like, you go upstairs and watch Netflix and then leave me to watch, like, my shit TV that I watch when you're not here in the week. Thanks. Without any judgment, without, what are you watching? You're actually watching this? Or, I'm telling you now, I ain't watching I'm a Celebrity every night of the week until it's finished for 3 weeks. And I'm like, well, don't then. Go upstairs. Go away. I need to clear my head when I've been on it all day at work and dealing with intense stuff. I might just want to watch someone eat a rabbit's anus.
Oh, dear. And that's why I don't watch that show. Oh, no.
Let's not even get in it. Yeah.
Right. But no, you're right. It's tricky. And I wonder, hearing you talk about that, how much of that is expectation? That when he's not there, you don't worry about it. If you have a boring evening, maybe it's not even boring because you're catching up on your shows, you're kind of zombieing out a little bit.
Yeah.
It's relaxing for you. You're not kind of judging it via that parameter. Whereas when he's there, you're like, well, this is our relationship. We should be having fun together.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like.
But how much fun can we have right now? This idea of you should still be dating somebody when you're in a relationship with them. You know, you should still be going on dates, but right now you can't go out for a nice meal. You don't have that shake-up of environment, and so it can feel a bit too routine.
So routine, and I really don't like it. My friend reminded me the other day, she's like, Dan, you've been going out with Anthony, it's funny going out with, like, we're an old married couple, but because we're not married, it's still weird. Like, my daughter said to me the other day, well, he's not your boyfriend, is he boyfriend? And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess. And she's like, well, how can he be a boyfriend? Like, I'm like, well, no, he's not my boyfriend. Well, what is he then? You're not married. It's my daughter. And I'm like, oh, anyway. My friend was like, Dan, it's 23 years nearly you've been going out with Anne, and you still fancy him. You still would love to go out on a date with him and get dressed up, and you both get dressed up and go for dinner and drinks, and you party the night away on the dance floor together still. Like, you've got to pat yourself on the back for that. I mean, let's not push it and say over going out with the girls. I'll put them on a par together. But he's up there. Like, of course, he's my guy. Like, we've always been in this kind of thing that works well.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you what, Bob, this sitting down in front of the TV every night together, looking at each other, you know. I want to listen to podcasts, put documentaries on, and I have to get shunned up to the bedroom or in the dining room or somewhere else when it's my living room. I guess it's his too, right? But
it is.
Yeah. So being single, being in a relationship, it's lockdown, it ain't no fun, I don't think. Well, you might be able to elaborate, I don't know, dating and all that.
Yeah, we will come back to an update, actually, on my dating life. But no, not necessarily easier being single right now.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming man who infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family, with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
We should also talk about Jen Brister, who I really enjoyed chatting to. And we've got actually such brilliant feedback for her episode in terms of the things we talked about. So we went into a bit of a deep dive in terms of sexuality. We talked about parenting and same-sex relationships. Her perspective is one that I just really appreciate, as both kind of bang up to date with current thinking, but also kind of like very reassuring and lived in, if that makes sense. So she's teaching me something, but she's teaching me it with a confidence that I'm like, oh, yes, of course this all makes sense.
Wow, like what? Elaborate.
Well, for example, she's got a whole book called The Other Mother, where she goes into her experience of being the non-biological parent for her twins, and how she partly wrote that book because she feels that all parents feel that to an extent. You know, she felt somehow underprepared when it came to them being born and thinking, okay, well, they've been inside you for all this time. I feel you've got a head start and I'm playing catch up on parenting, and actually them realizing, oh no, neither of us know what we're doing really. You know, you may have done the pregnancy bit, but neither of us have dealt with them born and out in the world. And really all parents are like that. You know, my own parents say that to me. They didn't have a clue. Yeah. They were like, we did a better job the second time because we knew what we were doing.
Yeah. And it just goes to show, actually, whatever your dynamic is in your household as parents, whether it's same sex, whether it's a single parent, whether it's 2.4 kind of thing going on, man and woman, no one quite knows. And I don't think it's necessarily the person that, yeah, well, like she said, the person that carries the children, they don't know anymore either. Yeah. What it is the shit that women generally put up with and become doers and overdoers and start thinking that they have to do. And obviously, traditionally, you know, in heterosexual relationships, he might go back to work, you're at home, so you do more. And like, he gets let off the hook a bit, so then you're in control. And then I kind of feel it a bit for men who want to get involved. And when you're breastfeeding, I think that's difficult as well, because you're the feeder, you become this carer. I wasn't having any of that. I was like, hell no, we are in this together from the beginning, and you have to be able to get up and feed this child in the night. I can't do this every night, three times a night. So whether I'm going to pump my boobs or whatever I'm going to do, you are in this with me. You're going to change a nappy. You're going to be in the bath. Try and wash it, the kid. And
it.
Try and wash the kid. And you like, turn the tap on or when it poos. You know, when we're in those situations where we're like, ah, you know, we often have to do something, whether you take the baby out of the bath and put it on the floor on a towel because you're in a pickle. But often men will call out to women or the partner that maybe does less. I need your help. I can't, you know, and I've always thought, you know, my mum was on her own, you sometimes just got to figure it out. As long as you're not going to hurt the baby, so figure it out. And so I think a lot of the time it's down to like the couples, that the one is more controlling and does it all, and the other one hasn't got a look in, but then they're pissed off because the other one doesn't help. You've got to give responsibility.
Right. And it's not easy. And I think a lot of the time parents in trying to work it out, they fall into the roles, not necessarily on purpose, just something falls into place and then they're kind of in a pattern then. And maybe for some women that can take place because they feel, what will people think if I'm not seen to be active in my child's life? Whereas men don't have that same kind of pressure. No. You know, that it's far easier as a man to be held up as some kind of hero for going to the park with your baby. Whereas for women, it might be like, well, but where's the mum? Why is she not at the park?
Yeah, men are held up as heroes for doing those kind of things.
For parenting their own child.
Yeah, basically. Babysitting, that's the most infuriating thing.
Oh, you've heard it call that?
Yeah, of course. I've asked him to babysit. Well, he won't babysit, so I can come out. He won't babysit. I mean, I cannot. Sorry, wow. Anyone out there who uses this language for the other parent to have the kids. Maybe when you're separated, but like when you're living together and you need your guy to babysit, what is that? You've set yourself up there. You need to take back some control. But hear me sounding all like, yeah, this is what you do, equal, blah, blah, blah. It soon reverts. Like I've realised, I've had to reflect the last few years, like I'm still doing all the shit. So as much as I set it up originally that I needed help with it, the roles have fallen back a bit. I think I need to do something about it. You know, washing, cooking, all the shit. I'm doing it, Bob. And he's quite capable. He does do other things. Again, I think that's an excuse. Listen to me. Oh, he does do other things. Well, not as much as me. Why?
It's the concept of the mental load for women that they are expected to be. I guess expectations is fast becoming a theme of this episode. But they are more expected to be in charge of the household in a heterosexual relationship. Yeah. And even the jobs that he does are often ones that you've assigned to him. And so even the things you're not doing, you maybe have to check that they've been done or that they've been done right, or you have to give him a nudge if he's forgotten. And so you're still kind of in charge. And then this kind of power imbalance then leads to a situation where some people then look at it as, oh, I've done her a favour because I've done the laundry. half of that is your laundry.
Half of that is your laundry. You just haven't thought about it. Like, I know now there's bed sheets in the machine and I'm not at home and they need to go in the dryer.
Well, that's burning in the back of your brain. He may be sat next to the dryer. He won't even know.
No, won't even know. Won't even know. And this isn't anything to do with heterosexual relationships, is it? Because it's about just roles that you find. Same-sex couples will find themselves in roles too. You know, that one's doing more than the other, maybe. You know, it's just about finding that equality in your relationship. Again, when you're dating, that's even interesting because I remember finding him so attractive because he lived in a flat on his own and he could do everything. Mm. Like, again, I look at other women and I think who've got sons who would do everything for their sons and I think, raise your sons to be attractive to women. You know, can they cook? Can they clean? Are they on top of everything? You know what I mean? Not that this expectation I'm going to meet a wife and she's going to come and do it all for me. Like, hello. And I thought it was brilliant that he could do that, that he could do all of those things domestically. That's a really cool thing. I wonder whether when you're dating, when you start seeing that, you know, you go to someone's house or their flat and what you kind of look for, whether that bothers you or not.
I mean, yeah, no, I've been in that situation where I've gone around to somebody's house and if it's messy, I know I can't live like that. And so in the back of my mind, I'm then thinking this will become my problem. Right? If this is how they're living,
I'm going to be taking this on in a few months.
Right.
But how much would it put you off somebody? You'd have to have a word, maybe.
Yeah, it wouldn't necessarily put me off, but I would have it in my mind.
Like, hope you don't think that this is going to be me. Like,
yeah, well, I guess it's the kind of patterns you can notice.
Yeah.
Like if they're disorganized, if they don't like where they live, they don't enjoy their job, and yet all these things and they don't seem to be doing anything proactive with, then that strikes me as,
you wouldn't like that.
Are you going to expect me to fix this or listen to you complain about your job every day and not leave? Like, it's wearing to
me.
Red flag. And I think that's a one that I've had to evolve because I've been in quite a few of those relationships, partly because of the work I do and the mental health campaigning and that kind of stuff. They've expected that I'm going to fix their life and maybe to an extent fix them. And that's not what I'm there for.
Hell no. For much more than that.
And so that's that one. And then we've kind of touched on it a bit already, but Dr. Laura Dabney's episode, a psychiatrist I've interviewed previously, who I got to chat to again, mainly around lockdown and relationships and the clients that she works with, as also a relationship counsellor, how they're finding it. And so I think we've kind of touched on it a little bit already, but that is a really fascinating episode as well. And then you were also keen to hear about an update with my experiences dating.
Of course I am. Like, he keeps me waiting. I need to know what's happening.
Right. So last time we left off, I think there was someone I'd stopped talking to when I used that Bumble article to decide a good message to sort of cut things off. And that was fine. And I've not heard back since. So that's sorted, because you never quite know when you end off communication if you're going to then have them pop up a week later
when you're down.
Yeah, I think some people try that as a strategy.
Yeah,
if well, just wear them down.
They don't know you, do they, Bob? If they think that's going to work.
I'm a bit too stubborn for that. I mean, we'll see about this Christmas. So a thing that I experience in dating is every Christmas I receive messages from exes. And sometimes they're, you know, proper exes, and sometimes they're people that I've been on dates with and it didn't go any further.
Right.
And I receive messages, and sometimes they're Merry Christmas.
Right.
And that's it. Sometimes they're a bit more like, how are you? I've had questions of like, oh, I hope you're having a great Christmas. Are you still single? I'm like, where did that come from?
Right.
And I imagine there's an element of, you know, you may be sat at home with your family and I don't know, you're around relationships that maybe you wouldn't normally, or it's a cold season of the year and you're feeling a bit lonely. I don't know. But yeah, every Christmas for most of my adult life, I get messages like that. So we'll see if that happens this year. So I'm always glad if I do genuinely feel it's the best to not continue talking to someone if that succeeds.
Yeah.
Because it does not feel like it's guaranteed.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. And then obviously I talked about somebody who we dubbed Green Guy because he's a fellow Green Party supporter. Yeah. It's interesting. I like.
Have you dated anyone before that supports the Green Party?
No. Friends that support the Greens. I mean, unfortunately, you know, I would say, unfortunately, there's not quite enough people voting for them. And he has a campaigning related job as well, yeah, which I can really get invested in working for charity. So that's quite cool. And so I think we left off last time with us having gone on a first date, a dog walk, and we were looking like there was going to be another date. Mm-hmm. And that did come true. Right before lockdown started, we had one scheduled in. And so part of me was watching the news. Do you remember the Saturday when they were announcing it?
Yeah.
And then they kept pushing the press conference back.
Yeah. And that was hilarious. Like, we're all sitting there. I was sat there literally waiting for it. And then, like, all of a sudden, we're still sat there half an hour later and an hour later. And then my WhatsApp starts going off. My chat groups are like, how long do we need to fucking wait for this guy? And it's quite funny that the nation seemed to be sat waiting for this announcement for ages. Was that, did that feel
yeah,
like, yeah.
And we all just kind of put up with that. You know what I mean? I'm like, if I add up the hours I've sat in this pandemic waiting for Boris to announce things, I wouldn't go on more dates with him, put it that way, if he was that late. So, yeah, okay. Crazy. And so, of course, part of me was, you know, keen to find out what's going on with that, how it's going to affect work, life, everything. There was also a part of me thinking, I've got a date tomorrow. Please, can
hold off.
Can we just, you know, maybe start it the day after? Obviously, it started a few days after, so it was all good. So that was the kind of weird thing of like, I don't think I can text him. This is too intense to be like, oh, just watching the news, wondering if I'll be able to see you. But we did end up going on another dog walk. The breed of dog, she's a pack animal, being a husky cross, and so it doesn't really do well being left on her own. But obviously, at the same time, like, we can't. At the time, we couldn't go inside anywhere with someone not from our household. So
yeah,
nothing changed. Although I do kind of feel like in hindsight, I was a little bit set up to fail on like choosing somewhere to eat because I was really like stressing out about it.
Aww.
And it was the combination, right? Because we've got to eat outside for the husky and for also the COVID. The husky and the COVID.
The husky and the COVID forcing us out into the winter days.
Yeah, so there's that. Then also there was some rain forecast. So I'm like, you know, on Google Maps looking at different places because it was somewhere between where we live. Oh. So it's not somewhere I know hugely well. So then I'm like, oh, which of them have parasols out on Google Maps? Like, all of this nonsense. And then also, like, you know, obviously, what food do I want? And I just realised I am not equipped for this. Like, this is too many parameters. Like, I felt bad at the time because we ended up having to change our plans last minute because the rain was not going to work out with sitting outside. Long story short. And so then we still saw each other. We just ate somewhere else. But I did kind of feel bad at the time. And then in hindsight, I was like, no, I was set up to fail here. I'm not, partly I'm not a dog owner, so I'm not equipped to know.
To take it into account.
Yeah, I'm not used to doing this. I'm not used to taking all the COVID stuff into account. I don't know this area.
Oh.
And so that was never going to be easy to choose somewhere to eat.
No, but that's cute of you, though, for trying to do all that and take all that into account.
Although, caveat, my train was delayed by like half an hour. So I felt bad because of that, which is part of the reason why I was sat on the train planning.
Yeah, right, okay.
I think otherwise it wouldn't actually have been any easier probably to find somewhere to eat, but we would have maybe sort of wandered and seen what there is to see/eat. But in this case, I felt kind of guilty because I'd missed my train the previous day we went on.
Bobby, isn't you?
It's not. I think it's maybe me and COVID. Like, I just... I'm really pride myself in being on time. And that one, I just, you know, one of those, you miss it by 2 minutes. You hear it pulling away as you go down the stairs. That awful thing. Yeah. And it was just one of those that maybe because I'm not going out of the house as much.
You forgot the time for every time it takes.
I mean, exactly. And because it's a date, you're also, you know, maybe checking your appearance an extra time. And you know, I was going out for the day, so I've got to double check all my keys and I've got everything with me. And so I just cut it too fine and I missed the train. And then the following time, second day, and my train is delayed and it's not my fault. And I'm like texting, oh, it's not my fault, I promise. I literally sent a screenshot.
I think I would. I think at that point, I would ask to prove that you weren't just this late guy.
Yeah. Well, this is just how you get in your head, and you're like, does it sound too vague and made up to be like, oh, yeah, it's half an hour late, so we're just going to send a screenshot, and it shows it's exactly half an hour. And anyway, because he drives, it wasn't a problem anyway. He just left slightly later.
Yeah.
So none of that was an issue. And yeah, so I think that was part of the reason I was trying to find the ideal place to go for lunch and then realised that was a real challenge.
Is that weird? Did he pick you up from the station?
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Yeah, so we met at the station. So he
parked there and you walked from there.
Yeah, yeah. And then we met up from there.
Because it's funny, I'm thinking, I've not really thought about this. Most of like dates that I hear about, the first few anyway, you meet somewhere, like, but then to get in someone's car is a bit of a thing, I guess, as well, because one, your car's quite your car, so it's like your house, it's not like your house. Two, you're quite close, like looking at each other, but the driver can't look really. So you're a bit there and you've got your bag at your feet, or it's always awkward being a passenger, I think, in someone's car anyway, and awkward but weird. And like you've been, I don't know, being on a date with like, hi, get in. And then like, I'm going to drive us here. And it's like,
I just have to cut in before you get me in trouble. I didn't go in his car.
No, I know.
So I travelled via train. Yeah. And then we met.
Oh, COVID.
Yes.
Oh, I'm not thinking COVID. I was just thinking in general. Oh, right. Yeah, he parked and you then walked.
Yeah, but no, you're right about the car thing. It is something you sort of, I feel weird as a non-car owner getting into someone's car and like having a look around the space and being like, what do I think of this car? Would I like to be driven in this? It's like, who the fuck am I to judge? I'm not driving them anywhere. So no getting in the car, but I did. Yeah, so we just met up, went for another dog walk, had lunch, and it was lovely. I had good chat, and interestingly, he seems to be opening up to me more, which is nice and a bit novel for me because I'm so used to dates where you sit down and you have a drink or you have a meal and you have a period of time where I can ask loads of questions and there's not a distraction of being outside or a dog that might spot another dog and want to try and run over to it and that kind of stuff. So we weren't able to kind of get into that deep flow of conversation. Instead, it was more kind of conversational and there were silences, but not in an awkward way at all. So it just felt really comfortable and, I guess, familiar.
Mm.
So it's all just quite novel and not what I'm used to.
But now, then lockdown occurred.
Yeah, so then we're getting, obviously, we knew lockdown was coming. So we get to the end of the day. I've got a train to race off to. So I sort of had some questions before I went. And I said, you know, have you found getting to know me so far? Or something. I don't know how I phrased it, but something like that.
What a question.
I like a bit of feedback. And he said, nah, not really. Yeah. And then laughed. And I was and obviously a bit of your heart is like, what?
Yeah.
He was teasing me and it's a good sign that someone can like take the piss and sort of stand up to me a little bit, I guess.
Yeah. Well, so it's a sign of a bit of personality.
Mm.
You're great.
Like, well also I think it kind of implied like, yes, obviously, a little bit. Because you wouldn't make the joke if it was actually
not true.
Yeah.
100%, I think that you'd go, yeah, great. You know, I look forward to seeing you. But if someone it shows like, well, what do you think? Of course I've liked seeing you, like sarcasm. Well, that's what we'll take from it, won't we?
That's what, yeah, we're going to take. That's we're going to take
taking it from it, yeah.
So that was that. And then I said about, I won't be able to see you. Like, hopefully we can catch up more on FaceTime, which we'd had a few chats like that prior. And he seemed keen for that. We have not been chatting on FaceTime. And I don't know entirely what that's about. We have been texting pretty much every day, so the communication is very much there. It seems to
right.
be going fine. It's weird for me because it's been nearly 2 months now since we matched on Hinge. And I don't think I've ever spoken to somebody on text for that length of time, having only gone on 2 dates during it. I am someone that moves quite quickly.
Yeah, really quickly compared to my friends.
That's what I'm learning. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what this podcast is teaching me. I move very quick. We talked about this a little bit off air, actually. I sort of have almost 2 stages of trying to lower my expectations. So the first one is when I go on a date, I just try and really treat it as I'm meeting a new person, we'll have a new chat. That's all I'm expecting.
Right.
And then if I like them, that's over and above. I try not to set up my expectations as, you know, I'm going to really like seeing this person, because then I might be disappointed. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And then when things progress, then I have to sort of slow down my head again of, this may still not go anywhere. So watch how much you get invested. Keep it appropriate. But I think now that we've been talking for so long and he feels very familiar to communicate with, I sort of am at that point now where I'm like, this feels like we're sort of getting into something now.
Oh.
So as of recording this, we were looking forward to lockdown ending, and now it's looking like it may not really end that much with the tier system.
Tier 3 Birmingham. Yay!
We will see if we get our third date, but at the moment, it seems like we're heading in the direction for one, but how long can you text somebody for?
How hard is that? That is so hard when you really want to see someone. And also, I feel like those first couple of months should be really quite novel and new and exciting. When you've then, I know you get to know each other.
You also want to be spontaneous. Yeah. You don't want to have to plan like 3 weeks in advance.
That's what I mean.
Based on government guidelines.
You want that heart throbbing to continue, like when you meet somebody and like it's exciting. You want that to carry on for a bit, and then not to be then more drawn out into more like just conversations and texts, and it just becomes a bit, you've already, like you said, you've become more familiar, which is great in one way, but in another way you then miss out on the novelty because the familiarity's crept in so quickly, because I've not been able to have quick dates with you for an hour, or quick coffee, or to see you for dinner, or get dressed up to come and meet you, and all that goes with like enjoying going on a date, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just now lying in bed in my trackies, like texting you. All right.
But no, I'm enjoying, yeah, getting to know him still. And
yeah.
But even, you know, when we did get to see each other in person, we've not hugged. Right? It's such a small thing, but it's like I hug everybody. Like I hug loads of our guests after, I mean, obviously they're Zoom guests at the moment. But, you know, when I met Maisie for our first episode back before the pandemic, you know, we hugged goodbye. Like it's a new person that you've got along with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, that's quite weird as well to be like, I'm getting invested in somebody that I've
never touched.
That sounds a little bit creepier than
does
I've never touched.
Even on the arm.
I've never poked. Does that sound more like you?
No, that sounds more creepy. That's awful. But yeah, you want to like all go in for the kit. Like it's all that newy stuff that's exciting, right? Bit of a kiss, bit of a knot, bit of a lips touching, my arm on the back, bit of a squeeze. Oh, it excites me thinking about it. I've not had that new with anyone for a long, long time. It's still nice even with Anne. You know?
I do wonder the kind of transference as well, because the restrictions do mean that I'm allowed to hug the dog, but not him.
Oh, come on.
Right? And to be fair, not that a dog would give a fuck anyway. No. You know, on the second date, Sasha recognised me and got really excited.
Did she?
Yeah.
Did you want to, be honest? Did you like the dog?
No, yes, definitely.
Imagine if you didn't, that's weird as well, because I ain't hugging the dog.
That's a whole other thing. Especially no, I like animals, dog. And I'm very like that. I'll, like, get down on their level.
Oh, which is a long way down for you. He's 6 foot something.
3.
Yeah. I do love that though. I mean, you can't go on a date with someone who's got a dog and like hate the dog.
The guy. But I guess maybe it makes it a little bit easier that I can hug Sasha goodbye at least.
Oh, because it's like hugging the person. Well, hopefully.
God, it sounds a bit tragic, doesn't it? Jesus. Right. It's just, you know what, as well, this is the reason why, ironically, we'll see if it makes the edit, but I think I talk about it with an upcoming guest, actually. In many ways, I actually don't like talking about relationships, ironically, given now hosting this show. The reason being, I feel like it can seem a bit messy. I'm a little bit embarrassed, if I'm really honest, by how often relationships don't work out.
Right.
And I'm aware that that's not a me thing. That's, you know, most relationships don't end up going somewhere long term, and actually the ones that do go somewhere long term end in separation or death. Mm-hmm. So I know that's a grim way of looking at it. So I try not to be too harsh on myself for that, but it is hard not to see it as some kind of personal failure sometimes when you're getting invested in things. And so even this, it's a bit weird to talk about and be like, I can feel myself getting more and more invested in this thing, which also feels against the odds because of the pandemic.
Absolutely. And I think that's really cool that you've brought that up and that you're even like aware of that, because there'll be so many people that are listening that feel exactly the same, you know. And so many of my friends who are dating who are like, oh, is it me? This is hard not to take this personally. I'm dating and it's not working out. I'm tired of dating. I'm tired of it not working out. Loads of people, I think everyone, loads of people feel like that, don't they? Wow.
Look at us having a tender moment. But I think it's true. And you've got to try and remind yourself mm-hmm. that most of the times when dating doesn't work out in the early days, yeah. they don't know you yet.
Yeah.
So it's not really a rejection of you at all.
Absolutely. And there's more opportunity now than ever before to go on a date a night if you want. There's more, do you know? So there's more chance for rejection because there's more opportunity to meet somebody. There's so many dating apps and so much out there that you could meet someone all the time, even online.
And I think that's instead of things that we may not even class as rejection. So if I was to approach someone in a bar and try chatting to them and it doesn't work out, you wouldn't see that as rejection.
Right.
But that's still the first time you're meeting that person. Whereas on a dating app, the first time you're actually meeting them is the first date. But by that point, you've matched with each other, you've chatted, you've started to get invested.
That is so true. Didn't even think of it like that. You're right. When you meet someone in a bar, that if they walk away and you say hi at a bar and you have a chat and then they walk away, unless you've outright said, can I give you my number or can we meet on a whatever, but just that general first meeting, you can't take it personally because you don't know. They might not even be aware that you're doing that, or they're with their friends, like you said, you just don't move on. But actually going on a date, you are actually, you're letting that person know that I want to get to know you for a potential relationship.
Yeah.
So therefore, if that doesn't work out, then that feels like a personal rejection. So I think that's really cool that you've been honest about that. It's nothing to be embarrassed about, but I can easily see how it can look embarrassing to yourself.
Yeah, so that's me. But, I'm getting better at it. I mean, it helps that with the guests, I can share, you know, what I feel like on the day. You know, I mean, I think that's easier for me. I think the thing I find really difficult is when people have loads of questions. That's when it feels a bit like I'm not doing well. If I'm answering someone's questions of, oh, what's happening? Are you seeing that person again? Who are you dating now? That's when I can feel like I'm not doing enough. Whereas when I'm choosing what to talk about, that's a bit easier. So I don't know, I guess maybe this is the forum is a bit easier because I'm in charge and I decide what I share. And then if, you know, what I'm saying right now, we could crop it if I ask you to.
That's true. I've got a safety net if it all goes hair shaped. I just crop that. I've even ever dated any. I haven't even met Green Man. There's no Green Man.
Could you imagine? Sasha.
Yeah.
Green Man. That's like the sweet corn guy.
Yeah, it's like the Incredible Hulk. That's who you're thinking. That's who I think of every time I see him.
Green.
Oh no, that's the Green Giant.
No, a few of my friends that listen to the podcast have started asking me about Green Guy as well.
Yeah, well, you had to make your choice whether you even wanted to talk about it. And I love you dating now. All my friends who date, like, I just want to live my dating life for your life. So please carry on dating.
I think if we've learned anything, maybe it's like how everybody wants the hair type that they don't have.
Yeah.
It's almost like that, because if we've established anything, it's that being single or being in a long-term relationship, neither of them are easy in lockdown.
In any way, you know.
Yeah, I can still leave. I can still run off.
You can still go.
I'm not committed to anything.
No, and I get a hug whenever I want one.
Yeah, maybe shut not. Up.
Smug.
All right, so we will wrap up there. Thank you for joining me, being a brilliant co-host.
No,
and we'll be back with one of these the first Monday of next month, January. Jesus.
2021,
the do-over year. Let's hope it's better.
Let's hope it's better.
All right, that's it. On that fingers crossed.
Before we start getting down about that. Yay!
All right, thanks, Danielle.
Thanks, Bobs. Take care.
Thank you for listening. For more content, including extended ad-free episodes, you can join our Patreon, linked in the episode description. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta. with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet. Speak to you next Friday.